Thank you again. Well, thanks, everybody. I hope you've enjoyed your lunch. It was pointed out to me during the break here that I told you that the prize for the raffle was two raffle tickets to the Joffrey. I suspect most of you interpreted that what I really meant to say was two tickets to an actual Joffrey performance, so you don't have to go through a second raffle. Before I bring Don up on the stage, I just want to elaborate a little bit more on our national conference, which I mentioned earlier is coming back to Chicago June 10 through 12 at the Drake Hotel. It starts Wednesday at noon on June 10th, goes half day all the rest of the day, all day on Thursday, June 11th, and half day on June 12th. We have a number of keynoters, including Al Reese, who this week, Adweek, named the writer of the most popular marketing book of all time, Positioning the Battle for the Mind. He and his daughter, Laura, who will also be there, have just published a new book called War in the Boardroom. We have Joe Pyne, the author of The Experience Economy and most recently Authenticity Speaking. And we've recruited David Merriman Scott, the author of the wildly popular The New Rules of Marketing PR, to speak as well. We have the CMOs of AT&T, LinkedIn, Siemens, Salesforce.com, VPs of marketing of IBM, and a whole host of other companies. Ralph Oliva, the executive director of the Institute for the Study of Business Markets, will kick off the program, which is themed around the term unlearn, with a terrific, very thought-provoking presentation to set up the conversation at the entire conference on the subject of what we as B2B marketers have learned, what we need to relearn, and what we need to unlearn. You'll be hearing more details through the B-mail and other sources in the next few weeks. Well, as I have the pleasure and the privilege now of introducing Don Scheibenreif, I want to start out by saying, and you'll see this come across in his presentation, that Don's career has been a long-term journey from a pure business-to-consumer focus to today a pure B2B focus, with one midway stop along the way. Don began his career in 1987 with the Quaker Oats Company, where he held a number of increasingly responsible roles in brand management and customer marketing. He joined Coca-Cola in Atlanta in 1995 as marketing manager in the U.S. Fountain Division and progressed to marketing director positions in the Fountain Division and then in the North American Consumer Marketing Division. Don, I'm not sure what year it was, but along the way, you made the came back to Chicago, made the transition to True Value, which I consider sort of his midway stop to where he is today, a pure-play B2B guy at True Value, where he was responsible for field marketing, member marketing, and member communications. And in 2005, about 4 years ago, Don joined Grainger, where he now serves as VP of Strategic Marketing. He's responsible for segment marketing, segment strategy, marketing planning, service development, brand management, customer solutions, and customer analytics in Grainger's U.S. Industrial Supply Division. In other words, he's got big M and little M on his dance card. He has a Bachelor of Science in Marketing from DePaul University and an MBA from the University of Chicago Graduate School of Business. He's an active member of MENG, the Marketing Executives Networking Group, and he was recently named to the Marketing Advisory Council of DePaul University. Don lives with his wife, Mona, and their two teenagers in Northbrook, Illinois. And folks, you're in for a treat. Don Scheibenreif.
Thank you, Gary. Well, that was quite an introduction. Am I on? Can you hear me? Okay. Boy, thank you, Gary, and thank you to the members of the Chicago BMA. It's quite an honor to be here today. And I can't believe it's July is when you and I first talked about doing this. So, but I have to admit that I was a little nervous about what I was going to talk to you all about today, because Grainger's not exactly a household name. You've got folks, you've heard from folks in LinkedIn, AT&T, Tellab, Spencer Stewart. So what could I possibly say that might be of interest to you? So what I want to say about Grainger right off the bat is that we have, this company has a stability, a consistency, and a constancy of purpose that's enabled us to be successful in many businesses and institutions across North America. And as someone who has worked in the B2C side and CPG companies like Quaker and Coke, I can tell you with 100% certainty that marketing at Grainger is decidedly unsexy, but it's infinitely more interesting, and I'm happy to tell you more about that. So let's get started. So the theme of my presentation today is what I call focus over flash, and how Grainger is quietly helping customers in today's economy by staying on strategy. So as you all are digesting your lunch, I'm going to talk about these things. I'm going to tell you a little bit about Grainger and how we add value to our customer base. I'm going to talk to you about our go-to-market strategy, especially in today's economy. I'm going to talk about the role of marketing at Grainger, and along the way, I'll share some nuggets of what I've learned making the transition from B2C to B2B, and then some things that you can take away for your personal situation. So many of you may know who Grainger is, and many of you, I suspect, do not. I had no clue who Grainger was until I got the call from the recruiter. But simply, we are North America's leading distributor of facilities maintenance products and services in North America. And what does that mean exactly? We sell the supplies that are needed to keep facilities running smoothly and the folks like you inside them safe and comfortable and productive. And Grainger is a gem of a company, I have to say. We are, some factoids about us. We are a Fortune 500 company. We've been in business for almost 82 years. We did about $7 billion in sales last year. The size of our market is about $120 billion, and we have about 1.8 million customers. We sell 240,000 products in this guy, which if you miss a workout, you can actually use this to work out or fling it at somebody. 240,000 products in this catalog, and then access to another 500,000 on our industry-leading website, Grainger.com. So a wonderful, wonderful business, and we're very, very happy with it. So the essence of the Grainger brand is we exist solely to support the hands-on men and women who get it done every day. These are often the unsung heroes of American business. We sell products, we sell safety products to help keep workplaces safe. We sell energy efficient lighting to help a company lower its energy bills. And we sell the mundane, like a coffee pot for those needed breaks and office supplies as well. So let's talk about this facility today, the Standard Club. Actually, I found out that the Standard Club has been a customer of Grainger's for over 22 years. And unfortunately, we had invited the director of engineering, Lou Santella, to join us at lunch today. But of course, he was called off to an emergency, probably something you would never even know about. But it's people like Lou that keep this facility running smoothly. The Standard Club itself has 13 floors. It has multiple dining facilities. It has an indoor pool, 60 guest rooms, conference center, and administrative offices. So you can imagine, picturing it for a moment, all the details and supplies that go into keeping this facility running smoothly and clean and comfortable. The detail is just staggering. So at Grainger, we are very focused on people like Lou. And talking with Lou earlier this week, he will tell you that he pays a little bit more for the products that we sell at Grainger, but we more than make up for it with the service and the people and the delivery convenience for him. And part of the fun of marketing at Grainger is we get the chance to celebrate these men and women who get the job done. They are really the unsung heroes of business. A quick story, when I was in college, I took a job as I cleaned movie theaters in the Chicago suburbs. And it was the first time I'd ever done anything like that. And it was a very humbling experience for me because I found that when I did that work, that I became invisible. That people wouldn't look at you, they wouldn't talk to you, and they would just kind of ignore you. And ever since that experience, I've always made it a point to look people in the eye. That I see the cleaning guy coming to my desk every night because I'm still there when they're cleaning. And I say hello. And the thing about Grainger, which is great, is we say hello to a lot of the people who do the job and get the job done. And that's part of the brand. That's why I'm actually pretty excited about this business and about this brand, because of getting to work with folks like Lou and the people that you see on the screen. So let me give you a quick story about how we have helped a real customer in a situation. So it's a Saturday night in July. Our customer, Eklund Tools, they are based in Franklin Park. They use melted steel to make hex keys and screwdrivers. Again, not a real glamorous business, but at the time they were running 24/7. A main fuse failed in the plant, the fuse that controlled that pot. Now, when that pot goes cold for about 4 hours, it takes jackhammers and about a day to get it cleared to be running again. After 8 hours, it's almost impossible to clean that thing out. So you can imagine yourself, if you were at home and you lost power, I know I worry about the sump pump all the time, you know, that failing, as well as all the meat in the freezer. But what was Eklund going to do? Well, the facility manager knew Granger. They called us. One of our people opened up the Franklin Park branch, got the fuse, brought it over to Eklund, and got production back up and running. A small story, but it means a lot to this company, and that's an example of how we add value. We are good in emergencies, but we're also good in everyday stuff to run a facility. And a great quote, like many of you, you know, our business is not immune to the economy. But this is a great quote from one of our branch managers who is doing a business review. We are choosing not to participate in this recession. We are choosing not to participate in the recession. We love that quote, and it perfectly summarizes our business and how we feel about it today. We see tons of opportunity, and I'm going to talk to you about how we're going to take share and take advantage of this unique market opportunity for our business. So, Granger does not make anything. We sell other people's products. We move boxes. It's an amazingly complex and amazingly simple business at the same time. So why should customers do business with us? What makes us different than anybody else who sells more products than we do? Well, I'll tell you what makes us different. We learned about 5 years ago, like many of you in the B2B world, is that customers wanted more than just products, they wanted solutions. And we found that the more value, the more solutions we helped our customers with, the more important we became to their business. And those solutions really fell into two main buckets. The first one is knowledge to help them better manage their MRO spend. Now, I bet many of you probably don't have a clue about the MRO expense line in your budgets, and most people don't. It's one of those line items that is invisible. People really don't think about it that much. They just deal with it, and it goes on. But a lot of our customers really wanted to get their arms around how much money they spend to keep facilities like this maintained. We figured out a way to talk to them about how they spend their money and how they can save money by working with Granger. And it's not about price. It's about the purchasing process itself. We also figured out that a lot of them wanted, they were wrestling with things like safety on the workplace, labor issues, cost reductions, their budgets getting cut, even now sustainability. And the more we learned about customers' needs, the better position, we figured out that we could add value to these types of solutions. So it was about getting people to think more about Granger from just products in an emergency on a Saturday night in July to, yeah, they could really help me solve my issues around safety, for example. So this is a word that's probably on all of our minds right now. I know it's on mine. And many of you, it probably evokes a very visceral reaction. But for Granger, about 5 years ago, we had to change. We had to change the business model. We had to move from being catalog slingers, which is what our salespeople were known as, where they would walk, they would show up, they would walk in, they would take the order, they would call the order in, and the order would ship. And you know what? That worked for 80 years. It worked really, really well for us. But we knew 5 years ago that it wasn't going to be enough, like many of you have probably figured out as well. So as I mentioned, we spent a lot of time understanding what types of solutions, how do we sell. We changed the selling process. We changed the hiring profile for the salespeople. We changed the marketing message. We changed even HR and some of the training that we did. It's taken us 4 years to get to where we are today. And we're still learning and we're still changing it. But it was all grounded in what the customers needed from us. Their stated needs were product. Their unstated needs were solutions, and we listened and we responded. So the question that you have to ask yourself in your business is, how connected are you to the changing needs of your customers? And how willing are you to change your model or your approach to meet those needs? So instead of me, I'm going to take a break here. I'm going to let you hear how this works from one of our customers and some of our salespeople. So Mike, would you roll the video, please?
Jeff Boat is a very interesting account. They build barges.
Jeff Boat is an inland manufacturer of barges and special vessels. I'm the vice president of supply chain, so I'm responsible for the purchasing function as well as the materials management function for the corporation.
There was a new management team coming in that had just been maybe 6 weeks old at that time. And I heard about Jim Masters, and I was able to get his number, and I left him a message saying, if you're interested in knowing how you spend your money with Grainger and how we might be able to help you streamline your procurement process, give me a call.
When Ross called me, I said, well, I'm sure I'd love to meet with you and talk about what you can do for us. But at that point, I really wasn't thinking about a full procurement solution in terms of replenishing our tool crib.
Two of the things that were most important to him was inventory and productivity.
Ross and the Grainger team took the time to really get to know the company and what was important to us.
It's a very large organization with processes that are very complex, a lot of processes that were broken, not working for them based upon their accelerated rate of growth.
He came in with six initiatives that he said, this is what our company's going to do. The number one initiative was organization.
Some of the big challenges were just knowing the inventory we had.
We knew we had the parts, we just didn't know where or how many. So just organizing from that standpoint is where we started.
In some respects, we didn't know what we didn't know, and that was one of the challenges, was to be able to identify what we had and where it was located so that we could access it quickly.
Tribal knowledge. You had to have tribal knowledge to find the lockers.
They had product that was being lost across the yard on a regular basis. Therefore, they were duplicating orders. The costs were going through the roof when it came to MRO supplies. And efficiencies were just going out the window.
Not unlike any other account, their idea of a planned purchase was, we need one, buy three, we'll put two on the shelf, we'll use it at some point. And that was one of probably the most crucial and beneficial things we did in the beginning, was helping get our arms around their purchasing habits.
We identified what were critical items and initially started out with about 100 items flowing through. From there, it has accelerated, and the number of SKUs has gone upwards of maybe 700 to 800 items where it is today.
As we implemented KeepStock, we were continuing to understand the purchasing habits and the things that they needed, so we grew that significantly.
We were mainly making 100 phone calls a day, where now everything has been brought more in-plant, so everything's at our fingertips. So it's a lot easier.
It's not like we are trying to force solutions at Jeff Boat. Jeff Boat is asking us, so what's the next step?
As their business grew from a $129,000 account to over $1 million that first year, we needed more service. We needed to be able to help drive business and to help accommodate and to follow through on the things that we had promised. And we were able to bring on our first on-site service manager in Matt Walls, and he has done a phenomenal job in the tactical day-to-day operations and helping them get what they need when they need it.
We actually have a very good idea now of what they're using, why they're using it, where they're using it across the yard.
As they've realized how we're able to bring solutions for their inventory and how much has simplified their business, they have really asked us to go outside of the envelope a little bit. 2 years ago, we did $0 in sourcing with Jeff Boat. We're going to do over $200,000 this year.
It's allowed us to consolidate multiple suppliers with Grainger and leverage our purchasing volume to drive our discounts higher. It has allowed us to standardize products. And really, at the end of the day, what it's allowed us to do is to be able to serve our customers better because we have the inventory that's necessary. And we don't have too much of it.
My whole goal was to come in and make a difference for my customer, not to sell them something. And this fit absolutely perfectly.
We have developed the partnership to where they know exactly what we're facing each day. It's a win-win for everybody. As Granger's winning, I'm winning, and of course as a plant, we're winning as a whole.
So that gives you an idea of the value that we create for customers. And the customer actually summarized our value proposition. We help customers save time and money in the maintenance of their facilities, plain and simple. It's not about selling products, it's about helping them reduce the total cost of operating their facility. So let's talk a little bit about, now that hopefully you have a good idea for who Grainger is, let's talk a little bit about this word, stability. And sometimes, and I've learned this from my CPG days, that stability is sometimes seen as a bad thing. That if you're viewed as static in a changing world, you're going to miss something. But I can tell you, honestly, from a B2B on the B2B side now, that stability is a good thing, and basics are a good thing, especially in today's economy. Our customers are counting on us to be there and to have the inventory for when they need it. And businesses like stability and consistency from their suppliers. And that's what Grainger does. We work really hard to make sure that we're listening to customers and that we are responding to their needs, we're responding with great service. So how are we taking this concept of stability and applying it to today's economic situation? Well, essentially, Grainger's strategy is to stay on strategy. It's very easy in chaotic times to want to question the strategy or change the strategy. But we are going to stay on strategy, and we're going to offer our customers stability by investing. We've added 100,000 new items since February 1st, about 60,000 in our catalog, another 40,000 online, an unprecedented product expansion for our industry. And we are carrying the inventory at the locations so customers get what they need when they need them. A lot of our local and smaller competitors are actually pulling back on inventory because they don't have the access to credit that we do. We're also going to invest in our e-commerce division. Grainger, we do $1.3 billion on Grainger.com today. It's been growing at double digits almost since the year of its inception, 10 years ago. It's a huge, huge business for us, and we're going to continue to bring it to life. And then last, we're going to protect our customer relationships and protect our service levels. The company recently announced some cutbacks in our staff as a result of the economic situation. But we are not cutting back at any customer-facing position at all. In fact, customers are going to see better levels of service for us, and that's one of our strategies on taking share in this very volatile economy. So we are going to stay on strategy, plain and simple. It's worked for 80 years. There's no reason to change it. It's not sexy. It's not flashy, but it works. I mean, last year we generated $530 million in free cash flow. I'll stick with this strategy. So from a marketing standpoint, what we did is we started getting dialogue going around messaging. Okay, that's one of the things that marketers do. It's one of the roles that we play. And one of the things that I found at Grainger is that the company was very hesitant to make claims about the business. So if any of you have worked in CPG, any marketer is going to find any excuse to make a claim about anything to get noticed in the marketplace. So when I worked at Quaker, my big project was I added a chicken piece to Kibbles and Bits dog food. And I'll tell you, it was a lot of fun, except the QA reviews. That wasn't, because I actually had to eat the product. But it helped you get noticed, right? It helped position you. It helped you get some excitement in the marketplace. Grainger was very hesitant. It's a very quiet company, very conservative, very humble company, and that's great. That's one of the reasons I love it. But there comes a time where we got to kind of, you know, roll the sleeves up and puff the chest out and say, hey, we really have something to offer you. So I have a team of people working on those very hard-hitting claims that we can back up, and our legal department is right here with us to do that. And that's going to be, you're going to see us being a lot more aggressive in the marketplace because we have a lot to offer. Our service levels, our inventory, we have credit. Credit's very important right now in this business. We've got it. So how do we do all these things? How do we use the economy to reinforce our position and our value in the marketplace? So the marketing team has been facilitating dialogue around that, and they're doing a great job. The other thing about staying on strategy is talk about what's working. So we were talking at dinner last night about the economy. When do we think things are going to turn around? And there was predictions from June all the way till next year. I don't know about you, but I'm getting kind of tired of hearing about the economy right now. I think I'm suffering from recession fatigue. And so it's really, really important to make sure you talk about what's working inside. So our corporate communications team does a really nice job of connecting our leaders with our associates in a variety of forums to talk about what is working. And what's working at Grainger, we have a very healthy balance sheet, we have cash, we have inventory, we've got great people, and we've got great service and a wonderful distribution network. People need to be reminded of those things because it helps them deliver service to the customer. All right, so I've talked about Grainger, I've talked to you about our strategy, now let's talk about marketing. And I've gotten a lot of questions about my personal journey going from B2C marketing to B2B marketing. And what I have to say is how I might summarize that is that it's moving from onstage to backstage. In the B2C world, the marketing team runs the company pretty much. Kraft, P&G, Quaker, Coca-Cola, the marketing folks are at the center of the wheel, and it's a great environment to be in as a marketer. On the B2C side, the B2B side, excuse me, I sound like Bugs Bunny or what was it, Elmer Fudd? I'm sorry, this is the third major presentation I've given this week, so bear with me. On the B2B side, marketing is often sales support. And so you can imagine my transition from going to the center of the wheel to being a support function. But I'll tell you, it was a good journey for me because being backstage on the B2B side, I've been able to build the practical side of my marketing brain. So the B2C is kind of the flashy, exciting stuff, which is great, the imagination, you need that. The B2B side has been about the practical side of getting things done. And I was very, very fortunate that Laura, the person that hired me, Laura Brown, the VP of marketing at the time, she coached me on how to adapt my style and my approach so I could connect with the operators of the business. And those are, and the people that run Grainger are largely engineers, operations people, supply chain people, and finance people. So imagine as a marketer, these folks are really about the nuts and bolts of the business. In fact, they can smell flash from a mile away. They're like a hound dog when it comes to that. Talk about brand and the question is, well, what's that about? So you have to adapt. And what Laura did, a great example of this is that Laura helped me sell in a needs-based segmentation to Grainger. Now, we have done a lot of work on understanding customer needs, but needs-based was a missing from our understanding. And any of you on the CPG side would know that that's a staple. It's kind of a given. On this, for Grainger, though, the company had kind of struggled with it because if you're talking about solution seekers versus manufacturing, people can get their arms around manufacturing. They're going to have a tough time with something like solution seekers. So Laura helped me make sure that whenever I was talking to leadership about this, that it was not an academic exercise, but it was about the practical business results, the returns that you're going to get. Here's why we invested the money. Here's what you're going to get for it. So I have to thank Laura a lot, and I think one of the reasons I'm standing here today is because of her and the coaching that she gave me, and one of the reasons that I like working for this company. So let's talk a little bit about what marketing does at Grainger. What we've worked really hard to do over the last 4 years, and I can't take credit for all this work. I actually have a lot of colleagues, many of which are sitting at the table today, and Laura. What we did is, over the last 4 years, we systematically built out our understanding of customers. We looked at their purchase process. We looked at their needs. We looked at the industries that they were in. We looked at the issues that they were faced with. We have customer loyalty studies. We do brand trackers. We have a competitive intelligence team. We have an in-house analytics team. We have an in-house economist. I have 20 people working on studying industries, about 15 of them. We've amassed a massive amount of knowledge about customers, and we are turning that knowledge into revenue-driving opportunities for the business. That has earned us a seat at the table. And that has been very important. That's the one thing I've learned being in B2B marketing. I hear from a lot of my peers is, how do I get a seat at the table? That's one way that we did it. So let me give you a real live example. One of the directors on my team, John McDermott, we were talking about, he had just started up a new team to study the manufacturing business. And we were talking about how can we get more people in the organization to understand this business better, because it's really hard to understand the business from behind a desk. So what he and I worked on is we sent out about two summers ago about 30 people out into the field, to about 70 different manufacturing facilities. We had them crawl around. We had them talk to customers. We had them look at what products that they were buying, but they weren't buying from us. And I've sent people to the oil fields of Alaska. I've sent people to the chicken farms in Alabama, to military bases in Mississippi. I myself have crawled around battery factories and military bases and hospitals. I was actually lowered down a hospital staircase. Chris was with me in a simulation exercise. I've worn a Tyvek suit with a respirator. You can't understand your customers unless you get out and do what they do. And as a result of that exercise, and we've done it in the petroleum industry and the hospital industry, we now have people in our Lake Forest headquarters that understand these businesses backwards and forwards, offer much less than hiring a research firm to do it for us. That's how you get a seat at the table. Our salespeople love this because we're out in the field with them, and they also we turn this into tools to help them become knowledgeable, and when they sell, our product management folks love this because it helps them figure out which products to buy to serve the needs of our customers. So looking at customers in new ways, getting out into the field, that earns you a seat at the table, and that's very, very important in B2B. Now, in the course of studying all these industries, we stumbled across these very broad solution platforms. We call them universal business issues. These are things that every single business faces, whether the large or small, government or commercial. Things like emergency preparedness, sustainability, and safety. We have been able to take what we've learned and create these broad solution platforms to help customers solve issues, much like I referred to earlier today. And how do we do that? Well, we belong to associations. We partner with OSHA. We talk to FEMA, even though they're not the most popular organization. They do a lot of great work. We're a member of the U.S. Green Building Council. We are an ENERGY STAR partner. I mean, we belong to and we learn from a lot of different places. That has helped us help our customers, because if we can help them get in compliance, then we'll get the benefit of that type of consolidation. So this is another really important thing that we've learned, is that is creating these solution platforms that can cut across and really apply to a lot of different situations. And then if you were here, I think it was back in November or December when Greg Welch from Spencer Stuart talked, he said one of the biggest things that a CMO could do to keep themselves and their departments in position was to partner. So at Grainger, we partner with everybody, and we have many great relationships. The one that I personally am the most proud of is our partnership with sales. We've worked really, really hard over the last 3 years to be trusted advisors to the sales team, and personally I was able to sit on the sales leadership team myself. And the corporate executive board, many of you may be familiar with them, they recognized Grainger last year as a best practice in how marketing and sales align their efforts to help serve the customer. And this was really around the example of sustainability. We would run free webinars on sustainability for customers. Our salesperson would either sit on the phone or sit next to the customer going through the webinar or follow up immediately after. So we were able to make the connection. And the concept of teaching customers is something that we are taking very seriously, because again, it goes beyond from selling products to offering solutions. The more we can teach customers about their business, the more they'll come to us. And you heard in that video that a lot of customers simply don't understand enough about their MRO spend. So part of what we do is we teach them about it and we help them manage it. I will also tell you, ironically, that my wife is a finance person. She's actually a chief financial officer, so you can imagine some of the conversations she and I have about marketing at the dinner table. After we get past, though, you guys are all about bright, shiny objects, and you're just a cost center. So I just kind of nod my head and say, yes, dear, and kind of deal with it. But what she has taught me is how to work with our finance partners to connect again with the operators. She's coached me personally on how to do that. And as a result, both myself personally, but other people in our group have learned, is we let our finance partner help us sell in ideas. They do the pro formas, they help do the ROI analysis, they stand side by side with us. So that partnership is critically important, because I know a lot of folks talk about how do you connect with your finance people. And I would say it's, you know, any type of partnership, treat them as a full partner in the process. When you do that, good things happen. And then the last thing I'll go into is inject some levity into the process, especially in today's times. So Grainger, back in February, announced a partnership with Mike Rowe, and he's the first celebrity spokesperson we've ever had in 82 years. And we love Mike because he gets our customers. He's done over 209 dirty jobs. In fact, Phil Clement and I were sitting at dinner last night. Mike is actually in town today. He was speaking across town for the International Truck Association, and he'll actually be speaking at our facility later on today. But Phil was actually sitting next to Mike in first class on the way out, so just the idea of it being a small world was kind of eerie. But Mike is a great guy. He understands customers. He's done their jobs. He's passionate about the work that they do and what they do to keep this country operating, as are we. And that's really the biggest connection between our two companies. Our corporate social responsibility, we're going to award over 200 scholarships this year to students to attend trade schools. Many of you may not know this, but there is an alarming shortage of people like Lou Santella, like the maintenance workers, because the average age is almost 53, and they're retiring in droves. Maybe not right now, but they were expected to. But there's simply not enough people to come up behind, because people don't see those jobs as being worthy. They'd rather be a professional athlete or a hip-hop singer or something like that. What Mike Rowe and Grainger are going to try to do together through his website, MikeRoweWorks.com, is really focus and bring attention to the dialogue around in this country about the need for skilled labor. And certainly with the stimulus package, which we're studying pretty heavily, by the way, hopefully will help us move in that direction. He's created a little bit of flash for us, so as a marketer, I always reserve the right to have a little bit of flash in our stuff. But it's a partnership with substance, and that's what we like about it. So you'll see Mike in more of our marketing materials, our communication. In fact, I was trading emails with him last night. I told him I would plug MikeRoweWorks.com, and he said he'll plug Grainger at the International Truck Show, so we're good. So what can you take away from this presentation? Well, first and foremost, Grainger is about supporting the men and women who get the job done every day. We're not just about products, we're about solutions, and we're about people, helping those people who get the job done every day. It's more than just a good hammer. We have a lot to offer customers, and the good ones understand what we do, and we're working on the others. We offer stability to our customers in today's environment by staying on strategy, doing what we do best, sticking to the knitting, staying to the core. That's what's really important to us. So the last thing that I'll go through before questions is some of the nuggets that I've taken away, and I'm far too young to call it wisdom, so I'll call it nuggets instead. So these are some of the things in my personal journey moving from the B to C side, which is on stage, to B2B, which is backstage. And this comes after a lot of times of charging up the hill, getting slapped down, picking myself up, going back up again, and getting slapped around again, as my colleagues can attest to. This is some of the things that we've learned. So find your flash in a seat at the table. That is so important for marketers in the B2B space. Do whatever you can to earn a seat at the table, because when you're at the table, things happen. Get a coach to help you navigate. So I was very fortunate that I had Laura Brown to help me. But who else can help you? If you're having trouble getting in front of the CFO, who can help you get there? Find somebody and have them help and give you the advice that you need. Looking at new customers in new ways. So one of the things I took away from my B2C experience was a fanatical obsession with the customer or the consumer, understanding them backwards and forwards. Bring that into the B2B side. Use that knowledge to create interest, excitement, and revenue-driving opportunities to drive the business. And then teach others about it. Share what you know. Don't hold the information like this. Share it. When you share information with finance, when you share information with the operators, they are genuinely interested, and they want, and then as a result of that, they want to help you. facilitate the dialogue versus control it. So I mentioned those solution platforms. The way that marketing got a seat at the table is actually we hosted the table. We facilitated the dialogue around safety, sustainability, emergency preparedness. We invited other people from the business to say, hey, how should we go to market on this? How should we do this together? Versus marketing showing up, slapping the PowerPoint on the table and say, ta-da, here's what we have. That doesn't work. You gotta do it collaboratively. And then get out of the office and be with customers. They can teach you so much. I've learned more from talking to customers than I have in our headquarters. It's really, really important. And you know what, it's a lot of fun. I've destroyed a number of pairs of shoes in the process. So now I've learned I just take cheap shoes when I go out into the field, but it's still a lot of fun. I haven't been to the chicken farm yet, although people keep bugging me to go. I'm just saying, well, maybe not right now. And then lastly is partner with everybody and be magnanimous, be humble, have humility, because marketing is not the center of the wheel, but we have so much value to offer. Find the way that you can add value and be very dogged in your determination to do it. So, thank you for your attention today. I would like to thank a couple folks before we open up to Q&A. I want to thank Kelly Harris, our communications manager, for working with me on this presentation. My Granger friends who trekked down from Lake Forest today. Gary and the members of the Chicago BMA. Again, I'm so excited to be here today to represent my company and my colleagues, and thank you so much for your attention.
And represent it very well, he did. I'm going to kick it the question and answer period off with one question, but we do have people with microphones, lavalier microphones, to walk around the room as many of you have questions. I think, Don, one question might be, how did you develop that relationship with Laura? And then you told us last night at dinner that she gave you some advice on how often and how to use the word brand, and that really you started to really describe it differently when you would talk internally about the brand.
Right. Well, Laura is Laura Brown, first of all, is a wonderful coach and mentor, so I didn't really have to ask. She offered it, and she would often... The thing about that, any type of coaching relationship, is you have to be willing to accept the feedback, and some of it was pretty painful, and I learned a lot of things the hard way. But at the end of it, I knew she was operating from the right place, so that worked out really well. One of my colleagues, Tom Murray, one of the funny stories that we had is we actually had a division president, not our current one, but a former one, where we made an entire presentation about the brand without using the word brand. That's a joke. No, we actually did. We did. So imagine how hard, and Tom used to work at Sears. He used to run the Craftsman business. Imagine how hard it was for a marketer to talk about marketing without using the word brand. What we instead talked about is customer experience. That is actually something that the operators understand. They may not understand, the Granger brand, the logo, isn't it? Because when people think about the Granger brand, yeah, isn't that just the logo? No, it's not. It's about the experience. So when we talk about the customer experience, that's how we talk about the brand at Granger. And when we do that, we get a lot of head nods. So that was the learning.
That's a great story. Before turning questions over to the audience, I've just got one more. Up until I understood what you were doing with Mike Rowe, Don, there was only one company that I knew of that I thought has done a world-class job of aligning itself with the celebrity. Because so many alignments of that nature, well, so many unions of that nature are misaligned, in my humble opinion. But the company up until today, and you're now the second company and I'm going to put in that boat, that has just done a phenomenal job of aligning with the spokesperson, of course, is Accenture with Tiger Woods. Performance delivered, and boy, does he deliver on that selling value proposition. How did you find Mike Rowe? Who approached whom? Mm-hmm. How did he come on your radar screen in the first place? And how hard was it to sell the company on at least a little bit of flesh?
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to credit our corporate communications team for Mike Rowe. We actually had a meeting down in Florida 2 years ago, and one of Kelly's peers, a gentleman by the name of Michael Cooney, he had the idea to bring Mike Rowe down as a surprise guest at our national meeting. And nobody, only four people knew about it. Even our VP of sales, who was running that meeting, didn't even know. He came into that meeting and the whole audience just went gaga. They just loved him. They gave him a standing ovation. He talked for 20 minutes. And that was when we knew that we had something, because a lot of Grainger people were actually, a lot of them are ex-customers, and they worked in some of that market. So that was a very good barometer for the appeal of him to our customer base, because these folks work with our customers, obviously, on a day-to-day basis. So after that reception, we got a lot of questions about, well, are we going to do more with him, or what are we going to do, blah, 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 blah. And that's when our corporate communications team partnered with our CEO, Jim Ryan, to sign him to a sponsorship deal. And that was finalized back in August. And then I was brought in to help activate the partnership from a marketing standpoint. So from that standpoint, it was really about how do we integrate Mike into our communication stream. We had a lot of different things going on. So the strategy that we had, and 2x4, who was our agency, has helped us with this quite a bit, and we love working with them, by the way. They helped us think about how to position Mike and string together all of our communication in a way that, oh, by the way, it helped reinforce the brand. Oh, by the way, it helped sell product, and we get to use this great celebrity. So I have to be honest with you that there aren't a lot of senior marketers at Grainger. So when we were actually making the pitch for the campaign that we developed, we got a lot of head nods because Fred Costello, our VP of Product Management, was here. He said to me, he said, you know, I'm not an expert in evaluating creative, but Don, I trust you and I trust your team. And then I saw a lot of nods head around the table. And I got the same from our division president. And that made me feel really good. That's when I realized that we had built credibility, that we could sell in a campaign in fairly short order to help activate the property. Now, at Coca-Cola, you will have no idea about how long it took to sell a campaign in, because everybody had an opinion and everybody weighed in and everybody had to see it. At Grainger, the operators trust us that we're not going to do anything irresponsible, and that's because we've earned the credibility.
Wow. Terrific. Well, let's open it up to the audience. We've got microphones, Marla, I assume. Are there questions from the audience? Right here.
Right. Okay. The question was, that video that we showed, is that used primarily for internal purposes or do we use it externally? So the answer is that we use it primarily for internal purposes because, again, we use it to remind people about the value that we create for customers, because not everybody sees every situation. Certainly the headquarters folks don't. We actually, you know what, that's a great question, and we don't share those videos with customers. A lot of them don't want to see themselves on camera, first and foremost. But that could be an opportunity for us from a testimonial side. I will tell you that, as I mentioned before, the company's very conservative and very humble about that. We might see that as seeing that we're tooting our own horn too much. So it's making that balance between demonstrating the value that we add versus, promoting ourselves. So we largely rely on the salesperson and our customer service associates to carry that message forward versus showing videos. That's been most effective for us. Great question.
We have one over here. As a distributor, I assume during this time you have finally a lot of your customers are looking for the absolute bottom rock bottom cost to acquire their supplies. Mm-hmm. How are you as a marketer positioning things in this day and age to really make your service that much more relevant when people, your customers, are now looking for the absolute lowest cost?
Right. Well, it goes back to our value proposition, which is about helping customers manage their total facilities cost. So we are not about price. So in that situation, if a customer wants the lowest rock bottom price, sometimes we play there, and we will do a lot. We will bid on jobs, and if we get the bid, that's great. But we prefer to focus on working with the customer to manage the totality of their spend at the facility. How can they save money by lowering their inventory costs? Okay, I've been in a lot of facilities where the tool cribs were just complete disasters. There were millions and millions of dollars of inventory sitting on the floor, not being used, we can help them clean that up, reduce that inventory. That money actually goes into their operation, and it has nothing to do with price. So that's one example, but that's how our value proposition is really about helping them lower their cost, but doing it in a way that addresses their immediate issues. And that's again, that's part of that change I mentioned, because we want that business, but we can't always be, we're not going to be the lowest price. That's not, our network isn't designed for that.
Oh, we have a question right here.
Actually, it was my current boss, Deborah Oler. I'm sorry. The question was, who initiated that change 4 or 5 years ago? And I have to, I will credit that to my new boss, Deborah Oler. And at the time, she was the VP of sales, and she recognized the opportunity. Our in-house consulting group actually did the analytic model to indicate the frequency of items that are being purchased. So about 40% of the items that a customer will buy to maintain their facility are bought between 1 and 5 times a year. But a lot of our customers would be buying those items in mass quantities, and a lot of the inventory would go dead. So through the analytics and through her knowledge as a customer manager, she called this and then created the urgency and the tools and the training to help affect that change.
Great, wonderful. Question right there, Lynn.
Okay. We are a very diversified business. We do business in almost 70 different industries right now. Historically, our base of strength has been manufacturing and government. And with the stimulus package, we are seeing potential for growth, or at least getting to flat in those two segments. And we are uniquely positioned to take advantage of money in the stimulus package because of the relationships we have in government and our strong manufacturing base. So we're not issuing any guidance around sales projections into 2010, but we are looking at ways that we can take advantage of the stimulus package and grow other parts of our business.
Don, you said earlier that you have found B2B infinitely more interesting than business-to-consumer work. I would love to know, maybe actually elaborate a little bit more on that, and then I'll ask you the $10,000 question. Feeling that way as you do, would you ever return
would
to
you
B2C?
Ever go back? There are some days that I would go back, only because it was a lot of fun. Could you repeat the question again? I'm sorry. This is the third presentation I've made this week. What was the question?
You described B2B as being infinitely more interesting.
An example of that. Okay.
Elaborate.
Well, you know what? I think what's interesting about it is that there are so many layers to this business. You've got consumers in consumer marketing. The person controls their own wallet, right? They spend what they want to spend. They react to whatever they want to react to. And I've always believed that on the B2B side, just because somebody puts on a blue shirt or a blue collar doesn't mean they stop being a consumer. They still want to be talked to. They still want to be treated with respect. They still want to have choices. But they may be constrained by purchasing models, by industry regulations, by other factors. So sorting through all those different intricacies to get the sale, that's where the challenge is. It's not about putting a video on YouTube and generating traffic. It's about navigating through all those potential twists and turns to get the sale. And that's what I find this business interesting, is it takes a little bit more analytics and a little bit more thought and even a little bit more creativity to get to the end user and be able to position yourselves appropriately.
But while we're waiting for a few more hands to raise, I'll ask. Well, is there a question in the audience right here? Please go right ahead. Go right ahead.
Hello.
Yes. Question with two parts. Number one, from a demand generation perspective, what have you found to be over the last, say, 6 to 12 months? What tactical initiatives has Grainger deployed that you found most effective? And the second part of that question is, what kind of internal processes do you have to track and measure the effectiveness of those tactics?
By far, actually, the biggest demand generators are this guy right here, this catalog. This generates a ton of business for us. But the second biggest one is our salespeople. We have over 2,200 people on the street. That investment actually gets us the greatest returns. And they do a great because we've given them the training and the tools and the wherewithal to connect with the customer and to add value. Now, we are, our in-house analytics team is helping us do what you've described, which is to be able to look at the returns on the different investments that we make and do them in isolation. So they're not additive, but they're truly separate, kind of like a marketing mix model, I guess maybe the term you might be more familiar with. So. Well, we do a lot of paid search, and that delivers very nice returns for us. We do direct marketing, that does as well. So we have a variety of ways that we invest in the business. The sellers, though, we think are really the key. Now, like many of you, we're getting very, very positive returns on paid search right now, and we're continuing to invest in that. But we like I described, because the customers, the buying process can be complex, we have to hit them from a lot of different angles. So you bring up a good point, though, is that without that type of ROI measurement that our analytics team is doing, it makes it harder for us to know where to place our bets.
Great. Just a quick follow-up, and then we have a question there. I think a lot of people here might be interested. What percentage of the people who use the catalog end up buying online? Do you have any sense, or could you share an insight on that?
Oh, boy. We send out over 2 million catalogs a year. Eric, do we have any conversion rate?
Pretty proprietary,
yeah.
Eh? Okay. We'll go to the question over there.
Suffice it to say, you don't have a $1.3 billion online business without a lot of users. How about that?
Leave it to me to ask the proprietary question. Go right ahead.
Don, how do you deal with the tension between a sales organization focused on quarterly results and a marketing strategy designed to deliver customer solutions?
Oh, boy, that's a great... Yeah, that's a tough one. Well, you have to do both. You know, there's really no way around it. Hopefully, if you're partnering the right way with the sellers, you can sneak in some of the brand building into that. And that would come in the form of the collateral that we do, the presentations we do for sellers, some of the training that we give, the webinars. So we try to find ways to balance it, but it's tough. It's real tough. And again, our sellers are focused on that value proposition, which is about creating value and helping lower the total cost of facility. If they were just out there selling product, yeah, that would be a lot of tension between those two. But because their value proposition or what they sell and what we've been talking about are perfectly aligned, we don't really have a lot of this, which is pretty unique from what I understand.
One last question. Anything in the room? Any questions in the room? I see a question back there.
Yeah, Don, last night you were talking about those 2,200 brand ambassadors out there that mm-hmm. you have, which I think is people don't ever think about that in terms of marketing. How do you arm them or work with them to make sure they represent the customer experience? I shouldn't say brand.
Right. What we do is actually our sales organization really takes the lead on this, and we help them. But we teach them about these solutions and making sure that they're armed to talk to customers. That's how we enable them to deliver value at the customer level. So I have a lot of folks who talk to sellers every day and are always finding ways to help them help the customer. So that's the way we've tried to make them brand ambassadors, by really delivering the solutions on a timely basis and making sure that they can talk about the company and how we add value.
Well, thank you, everybody. Don, you found a way. It's clear you and your team have been embraced by the entire Ranger organization. And to do that, you've done a lot of adapting, as you referred to earlier. But I suspect somewhere along the way, the organization has adapted a little bit to you, to accept some of the consumer marketing principles that perhaps you've brought to the company. Is there anything you brought with you from Coke and Quaker that wasn't adapted or was marginally adapted and has made a real difference in the business?
Well, that's a very generous statement. I would have to say what I brought with me from the B2C side was imagination. I think that's so important to a marketer, to have imagination and to think creatively. and I've tried to bring that to the Grainger space and do it in a way that didn't result in my loss of credibility, but I could find ways to apply that.
Sure.
So
let's give Don a big hand. Great job.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
We're going to do this drawing for the two Joffrey Ballet tickets.
Okay.
Get your tickets out.
Okay. Okay. All right. The number. Do I read the number?
Yes, please.
Okay. 623-740. 623-740. Excellent. Come on up. Yeah, come on down. Has anyone ever been to The Price is Right before? That's a great show, by the way. It was a lot of fun. I didn't get called though. Yeah. What? Okay.
Well, as a
yes.
Who is our winner?
My name is Megan Silva.
Megan Silva, congratulations, Megan. You'll enjoy it.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. As many of you know, we do a little homework in advance, secret homework, with people who know our speakers and presumably don't tell them that we've been in touch with them about what they might like as a speaker gift. And today, Don, we have for you a variety of things that you apparently just crave and love, including a lot of dark chocolate, many different forms and brands, a bottle of Merlot. It's called Molly Duker. I've never heard of it, but apparently it's very good. And then a pound of, I guess, your favorite coffee, a pound of Dunkin' Donuts coffee.
So excellent, excellent. Thank you very much, Gary. Thank you.
Don, thank you so much. We look forward to seeing you on our breakfast roundtable on an April 8th at our luncheon with Ed Russ of Grant Thornton. Please join the BMA LinkedIn group, join BMA, subscribe to the B-mail, and we'll see you next month. Thanks very much.